So good morning. I'd like to begin by thanking the organizers for the opportunity to speak today. And as my title suggests, I want to tell you about some new instanton effects in string theory. If you happened to see my talk here last year, this is a very natural sequel to that talk. That's one of the reasons I wanted to give it here. And this is based on work of Ed Rubin, which is to appear. So I want to begin my introduction very broadly. I'm going to be considering four-dimensional n equals 1 supersymmetric compactifications of string theory, or in theory. And as you'll see, the philosophy that I'm going to espouse about instanton effects in these theories is quite general, and so would apply to many such compactifications. But throughout my talk, I'm going to focus for concreteness on a sort of specific class. So I'm going to be considering the heterotic theory, Minkowski space times X, where here X is going to be, of course, applied to the L3-fold. And because I'm discussing the heterotic theory, I also need to tell you something about the gauge field configuration over X. So I'll specify V. So V is a stable holomorphic gauge bundle. Now, when I specify this background of X and V, there are various continuous choices that I need to tell you. So for instance, I need to tell you the Cayley class of the metric on X. And I also need to tell you something about, if I assume that I have a flat B field on X, I need to tell you the periods of the B field. So this data is naturally complexified into a complexified Cayley class. And of course, I also need to tell you something about the complex structure of X, and also the complex structure of this bundle V. So this classical geometric data is assembled into a classical moduli space, which I'll just call script M sub CL. Associated to this pair of X and its bundle. Now, a fundamental question about the low-energy behavior of such a theory is how this classical moduli space can differ from the corresponding exact quantum moduli space, which I'll just drop the subscript CL there. And now, in this context, it's well known that fundamental string worldsheet, or more generally brain instantons, can have a very drastic effect on this quantum moduli space. So, for instance, if I have some string worldsheet or brain instanton wrapping a suitable supersymmetric cycle in this compactification manifold, then it's well known that those sort of instantons can generate contributions, quantum contributions to a superpotential for the singlet moduli that describe for the singlet fields that describe these moduli associated to X and V. So, throughout my talk, I'll call these I'll give a name, all of these singlet chiral superfields that describe in four dimensions these moduli, I'll just call generally phi I here. Now, of course, when such a superpotential is generated, as I said, it can have very drastic effects on this moduli space, perhaps lifting entire branches. So this plays a very prominent role in recent discussions of string vacua that have no continuous moduli. So, let's see, I want to give an example of such a stringy superpotential. And of course, if I'm working in this heterotic context, the natural sort of stringy instantons to consider are just fundamental string worldsheet instantons. So these observations about heterotic string worldsheet instantons and singlet superpotentials go back 20 years to the work of Dine, Seiberg, Lin, and Witten. So the basic picture is, here's our Calabi-Yau free field X. If we want to look for a worldsheet instanton that generates a contribution to the superpotential, we'll consider inside X C. So here's C. For simplicity, it's going to be a smooth genus zero holomorphic curve. And I'll assume that as a holomorphic curve, C is actually isolated inside of X. And then what Dine, Seiberg, Lin, and Witten showed is that fundamental string worldsheets, which wrap C, can generate precisely a contribution to the superpotential for these moduli. So let me just sketch for you this superpotential. So I'll give it a name. The contribution from this given curve C is W of C. And so in any instanton computation, the first thing that we'll find is simply a term that comes from the classical action of the instanton. So the classical action of a string worldsheet that wraps C, it's just determined by the area of C and the Columbia metric on X. And also a contribution from the period of the B field over C. So this is the classical action of the automaton. And then if we go beyond the classical description and include one-loop quantum fluctuations, there'll be some one-loop determinant factors that arise from doing the Gaussian integrals over all the fluctuating modes on the string world sheet. So I'll just schematically denote these as some one-loop determinants. And now you see, well, we see very explicitly that our superpotential depends on... No, this is just...
Well, it's if you want to exponentiate the
outcome
of disconnected spheres, it's just
doing
one.
I'm just doing it. So as I say, from this, we can see very explicitly in this formula the appearance here of the complexified Kähler modulus of X. So C is a holomorphic curve in some Kähler manifold. The area of C is just given by integrating the Kähler form over C. So this area of C just represents the complex... describes the Kähler modulus of X and its complexification. So here's the complexified Kähler class. And in general, these one-loop determinants will depend on the complex structure moduli of X in its bundle.
Assuming they are not zero or something. Or maybe they're zero.
That's right. So we'll discuss that. That's, yeah, we'll discuss in a second. So this is just a schematic description of the superpotential. And of course, you'd like to make this, you'd like to give a very explicit description of this stringy singlet superpotential. This is actually quite a difficult problem. The first thing you have to do, of course, is to make the dependence of these one-loop determinant factors on the moduli explicit. And this can be done, but it's somewhat non-trivial. And a much harder problem in general is that we, in order to compute this full superpotential W phi I, we have to sum over contributions from all such curves in the Clavion threefold. So, you know, there may be thousands of such curves here, so this sum is difficult to do. Now, of course, you may say, well, we're really not so much interested in maybe the particular having a very explicit functional description of the superpotential. It's really enough to know whether or not this thing is non-zero or not. You see, if it is non-zero, because of this exponential dependence on the Kähler modulus, it'll generate a potential for this radius of X, and also a non-zero cosmological constant. So this compactification in Minkowski space, in the absence of any other effects, is destabilized if this superpotential is non-zero. So even though it turns out, even deciding whether or not this superpotential is non-zero is still a non-trivial problem.
Why do you say destabilized? It could just push it to a smaller fixed radius and so forth. I mean, usually that's what happens, right? This will destabilize at large radius, but,
right.
But this, if you manage to compute these, you'd be able to stabilize it back at some specific margin, perhaps.
Right. So I think this computation is only valid at large radius because the appearance of alpha prime there.
And you just want to do one instant, you're not interested in summing over multi-instant constants.
Well, the point is that if I just consider the instantons, any instanton will be weighted by an exponential factor like this that drives it away to large radius.
No, but that's just the leading behavior for large radius. I'm just saying there might be cancelling effects for finite radius.
That's right. I can't really. I was just saying this instanton. I would need. So there might be. So you're right. Things could happen at small radius that I can't see from this formula. I certainly agree. But just
it would be interesting to do even if that's not zero. Then it doesn't mean that we have to throw away the whole thing for string theory. We could still deal with this example. Which would be, in fact, perhaps more interesting, stabilizing moduli and all that, but it's more difficult.
That's right, yeah. So I'm just taking this at face value, not included. So as I was saying, though, even determining whether or not just this sum, this sum over just these particular instanton contributions is non-zero can be a non-trivial problem. You might say, well, I would expect generically for this sum to be non-zero simply because, you know, I may be summing up thousands of terms, but if they're all generic, then, well, the sum is generically non-zero. That argument's a little bit dangerous, though, because the superpotential, of course, is a quantity that depends holomorphically on these moduli. So we're actually summing up not sort of generic quantities, but holomorphic quantities. And in that sort of situation, it can be very dangerous to make genericity arguments. And so, for instance, in the case of these heterotic compactifications, which can be described, I would say, simply by linear supermodels, Silverstein and Witten gave an argument that showed that actually there's a miraculous cancellation in this sum of a world gene instanton effect. So in those compactifications, this actually vanishes because of a cancellation amongst these one-loop determinants. So even determining whether or not these string superpotentials are non-zero is, I think, in general, a non-trivial problem. However, there is one sort of heuristic reason we have to think that these sort of stringy moduli superpotentials are relevant, and that comes from our intuition from gauge theory. So the gauge theory example I'm going to be considering is just the simplest case, which is super QCD. Gauge group SUNC, and within that flavors, or by flavor I mean a massless chiral multiple that transforms into the sum of the fundamental plus the anti-fundamental representation of this gauge group. And let me introduce an integer P, which is NF minus NC plus 1. And then the statement is that here's an example where we have an explicit instanton generated superpotential that does indeed have a drastic effect on the classical moduli space. So in the case P equals 0, or NF equals NC minus 1, Affleck, Guyon, and Seiberg showed that a Yang-Mills instanton generates a non-zero superpotential for the quarks in this example. And so classically, well, there is some continuous classical moduli space of vacuum in this theory, but because of this ADS superpotential, all the branches on this classical moduli space are lifted. Now, super QCD is very interesting because it has a class of more subtle instanton effects than merely instantons that generate these superpotentials. So about 10 years ago, in the case P equals 1, or NF equals NC, Seiberg showed that there's an instanton effect where the instanton doesn't generate a superpotential, but what it does is it generates a complex structure deformation of the classical moduli space. So let me just remind you of this in pictures. So classically, the moduli space of super QCD is a complex cone with a conical singularity at the origin reflecting the unbroken gauge symmetry at that point. And now if I turn on the coupling, there's a one instanton effect which smooths out the singularity at the origin, so our cone looks something like a hyperboloid. So this is the quantum moduli space. Now, it's interesting to ask how this sort of deformation of the moduli space is actually described in low energy effective action of super QCD. And as I discussed here last year and as I'll review, this deformation is also described by an F term in effective action, but it's an F term that has a slightly different form than the superpotential. So here's our F term. This tensor omega sub I bar J bar is a symmetric two-index tensor on this classical moduli space. These fields phi bar are just the anti-chiral partners of these white singlet fields that describe coordinates on the classical moduli space. And these D bars are just the usual spinner derivatives in superspace. So alpha dot is just an anti-chiral Lorentz index.
That's because
this deformation is coming from a non-trivial cohomology class. It's represented by a non-trivial cohomology class. It wouldn't really be a deformation. If I could integrate the D bar here, this wouldn't really be a deformation. It just
so local you could answer to
him. But local yeah. Yeah. I'll in fact review some of those. I plan to review those sort of facts in sort of the first part of my talk, actually. I just wanted to introduce this to show you that this is an F term that's certainly not. So a superpotential geometrically comes from a function on this space. And this sort of F term you see comes from a two-index tensor. So it's a different sort of F term. And now, and I should say, if I consider super QCD with an arbitrarily large number of flavors, instantons also generate F-term corrections of this form, but where we have our tensor has more indices, 2p indices in general, contracted with 2p of these fermionic superfields. So now you see there's sort of a natural question posed by my two boards here. I've discussed the stringy analog of this Affleck-Dein-Seiberg superpotential, which would be just these moduli superpotentials, but I haven't really discussed, and it hasn't been too much considered, the stringy analogs of these effects. So for instance, we can ask the question, can string world sheet or more generally brain instantons, which don't necessarily generate a superpotential, nonetheless generate a deformation of this classical moduli space associated to the compactification? Or we can also ask whether or not they can generate the sort of higher F-terms that occur in super QCD with more flavors. So this is the question that I want to discuss for you today. And in fact, the idea is quite simple, and I just want to give it to you right now. So you see, in any instanton computation, the form of the effective operator that's generated by the instanton is largely determined just by the structure of fermion zero modes in the instanton background. So for instance, if we want to generate a superpotential, the simplest way to do that is just to find an instanton that carries precisely two fermion zero modes that generate this D2 theta measure. Similarly, if we want to find an instanton that generates this sort of higher F-term, you see, we need an instanton that carries more than two fermion zero modes. It has to carry at least four fermion zero modes, two for the D2 theta. Mm-hmm.
I guess that F-term you've written is a little bit misleading, right? That's on shell. Because it's not, the integrand isn't chiral unless you're on shell. So it's a bit misleading.
Well, I am.
I did this with D bar. It doesn't vanish.
Well, on shell it will. I am working on shell, but on shell it will vanish because D bar is going to annihilate. Well,
the question is whether D bar squared if I bar is zero, basically, or the analog, non-linear analog. So you have to be on shell.
Yes, that's right.
So generally, you need some corrections to this in order to extend it to on shell.
That's right. So that's a good point.
I'm certainly with the super potential, which is not on shell.
That's true. Yeah, so I am in writing all these expressions, I'm working, it's just working on shell, it sort of has a more natural, there's sort of a just a, it's a more direct connection to the geometry on shell, basically. I find it convenient to work. But yeah, I'm working on shell, and really just infinitesimal deformation throughout. It's just a technicality. So I say, though, the main point, though, is that to generate these sort of higher F-terms, we just need to consider instantons that carry more supersymmetric instantons that carry additional fermion zero modes. So we can ask geometrically what sort of world sheet instantons would those be that carry more fermion zero modes. There's sort of two natural, see, I've imposed some conditions here. C is a Jena zero curve. It's, for instance, it's isolated in X. So to find world sheet instantons that carry more fermion zero modes, we should just relax some of these geometric restrictions. For instance, we can consider the case, say, that C is a Jena zero or a rational curve. It's not isolated as a rational curve, but actually moves in a holomorphic family. So in that case, C will carry certainly additional bosonic zero modes coming from the family, and because C also carries some unbroken world volume supersymmetries, it will carry more fermionic zero modes. Similarly, if it turns out C has higher genus, C also carries more fermion zero modes. So we can discuss, you know, the general case is a holomorphic curve of arbitrary genus moving in some arbitrary family, and we can ask what sort of F term is generated in that case. So that's what sort of thing I want to discuss today. So as I said, my talk now, I want to basically do two things. And the first, not quite half part of my talk, I want to just review some facts about these sort of F-terms. Since we're going to be trying to generate these, we should, as Martin pointed out, know some things about, they come from cohomology classes and things like that. And the second part of my talk, I want to do an analysis of these heterotic world sheet instantons that generate such effects as, in particular, I'm going to be interested in the complex structure deformation of the moduli space and showing that, first of all, the instantons can generate this deformation and discuss how we can compute this and sort of see some of the properties.
Did you try to engineer this gauge theory precisely in string theory or not?
No, that's right. That's sort of, no, we haven't. That would be a different thing to do. Right, so I'm just considering sort of this general setup. Right. So now, I'm going to turn to the first part of my talk, which is just to make these general remarks on such multi-fermion F-terms. So I think a couple of comments I want to make at first. The first comment is that for simplicity in this discussion, I'm going to be just working in the context of global supersymmetry. This certainly isn't much of an assumption in the case that I'm discussing a gauge theory example like super QCD. But when I come to discuss these four-dimensional heterotic compactifications, it will be a restriction. And so strictly speaking, when I discuss these heterotic backgrounds, I'm going to be decoupling gravity in four dimensions and working with a non-compact local model for the threefold. So now, in general, when I'm discussing either, say, the Higgs branch of super QCD or this moduli, the singlet moduli sector of the heterotic compactification, my effective action is always going to be of the form. Of a four-dimensional n equals 1 supersymmetric nonlinear signal model, which describes maps phi from Euclidean space into, well, if I'm discussing the classical effective action, the target space will just be the classical moduli space with the usual signal model action. So as I said before, phi and phi bar are just the chiral superfields that give us local, that correspond to local holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on this moduli space. And here K is just some Kähler potential that describes the signal model. So this is the classical effective action. I know that in the full quantum theory, the effective action, the quantum effective action, is just obtained by replacing this classical target space by the quantum moduli space, the quantum moduli space. But sort of to motivate these sort of F terms, I want to think about, so if I consider just this tiny change in my classical moduli space to my quantum moduli space, there must be some correction that I have to add to this classical effective action to incorporate that. And I want to show you that the correction is an F term precisely of this form. So to do that, I just want to think about deformations of complex structure. Now, I want to describe them intrinsically, which means I want to think about them as being a change in my D bar operator on the classical moduli space. So D bar picks up a term involving the holomorphic Dobo derivative, where this term is described by this tensor, this one form of type 0,1, which has values in the holomorphic tangent bundle. So infinitesimally, this deformation, as has been mentioned, is actually described by the cohomology class of this tensor and this Dobo cohomology group. So these are one forms taking values in the holomorphic tangent bundle of the classical moduli space. And now, so this is my intrinsic description of the deformation. I can dually describe this change in the D-bar operator is a change in a local holomorphic frame. So my frame d phi I under the deformation is just to d phi I minus omega I sub j bar d phi bar j bar. So it picks up a little anti-holomorphic piece. And so with this change in the frame, what happens is that my Kähler metric, G, shifts as follows. So you see that G, my Kähler metric of source started off life as being of type 1,1 with respect to the holomorphic and the original holomorphic structure. And under the deformation, it picks up a component of type 0,2. So let me give this component a name. So I'll call it omega. It's just obtained by lowering an index on this tensor, this other tensor omega. So geometrically, omega here is a symmetric section, symmetric under the exchange of I and J, section of the bundle of quadratic one-forms, quadratic anti-holomorphic one-forms on the moduli space. So if I know how under this deformation the Kähler metric is perturbed, then I immediately know how to perturb my signal model effective action. So I just want to add a term to the signal model effective action that reproduces this change in the metric. And you see the term that I add is precisely this term right here. We can see that if we just do the integral d2 theta and look at the leading bosonic bit of this looking component, the leading bosonic term. So when I do the integral d2 theta, I'll just pick up derivatives of the scalars that sit in these chiral multiplets. So you see, I find a correction to the kinetic term for these scalars that precisely reproduces this correction to the metric. So now, as was alluded to earlier, there are a couple of remarks to make about this sort of F term in contrast to the usual superpotential. The first remark is, as was pointed out, this thing isn't manifestly chiral. The chirality depended upon the fact that this tensor omega here, living in this Dolbo cohomology class, is annihilated by D bar. And the second remark is, as was also pointed out, that so locally on the moduli space, I can always effectively integrate these d bars here and write this f term as a d term. So d4x, d4 theta times some correction, something that looks like a correction to the Cantor potential, which I'll just call delta k. And so you see, if I simply do the integral d2 theta bar here, I reproduce something that looks like an F term of this form. So here, this nabla is just the covariant derivative defined using the background Taylor metric on my moduli space. So this sort of correction locally can be integrated through this D term. But the reason to call this an F-term is that it does come from a non-trivial cohomology class on the moduli space, and so that means that globally, I can't integrate this up to such a D-term. So that's why it's an F-term. So I just want to say, when I discuss the heterotic theory, I'm mostly going to be interested in this deformation of complex structure, which is described precisely by this sort of two-fermion F-term. But I want to mention the generalization to higher P, since this is relevant for super QCD, and it's also relevant. Yes?
When you're distinguishing locally and globally here, normally the Cayley potential itself is only defined locally, because it's when you go from patch to patch.
Yeah, sure.
You mean globally in a more, or locally in a stronger sense, that you can't even do it that way?
Well, I mean.
So let me make it more precise. Are you saying that requiring delta k to be a scalar is too strong? We normally would require delta k to be a scalar mod any holomorphic and anti-holomorphic function in overlaps. You're saying that even that doesn't exist.
I think it's certainly more clear to think about it, these sort of issues, sort of just from the geometric.
Well, I mean, K makes sense geometrically also in the section of a bundle.
Oh, sure. What?
So you're just saying that the deformation is also a section of a bundle rather than a globally defined thing, if you think of it as a change in K.
I think the deformation, I mean, certainly comes from a globally, it does come from a, the deformation is a globally defined. Well, it's defined. Yeah. It's globally defined as this cohomology class.
Yeah, but just like the metric,
it's more different from Cayley function. It's trying to change the complex structure. Cayley function is with a fixed complex structure. So it's not a section of the same bundle. You're doing change the complex manifold, so the section of which line bundle.
Up to those two things get confused if you admit non-normal before the time
switch. I think what this amounts to, this change amounts to mixing chiral and anti-chiral fields to make a new chiral field.
Yes, that's precisely, yeah.
Which is different from, Kellerman doesn't do that the most naive. Yeah. So in other words, when you deform it this way, you better now change what you mean by phi versus phi bar,
sure.
Or it doesn't equal to 1, whereas K doesn't do that.
But that's very familiar, I mean, for example.
Changes of K don't do that. Now you think about K.
Yeah, geometrically, I mean, if you change K, you would just pick up some other 1-1 piece here. Yeah. So it's precisely as Kermit said. You can think about it as you change what you mean by chiral.
So if you allow that, then you get the same form.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to very quickly say.
I mean, in the particular case, you're doing that all the time.
That's the framework I'm coming from, so it's very familiar to me and normal.
So I just wanted to roughly mention these, the higher, the analogs of these sort of things for higher P, which they're also interesting to think about, although they don't have such drastic effects on the moduli space. So the idea is simply that we can introduce, rather than having a two-index tensor, we'll just give our index 2P indices, we'll give our tensor 2P indices. So this thing is, now it's going to be, again, symmetric under the exchange of all of each I.
You mean P greater than or equal to 1?
Well, P could be 0, and then it would just be a superpotential. It would be a function. So this is a symmetric section of this bundle of P forms of anti-holomorphic type. And then I can consider the same sort of turn my effective action where I just contract this tensor. With a bunch of these fermionic superfields. So let me just give this sort of operator a name. So one can ask the same sort of questions in the on-shell supersymmetry algebra of the signal model. What is the condition for this operator to be chiral? And so the statement is that it's most natural to express the chirality condition not in terms of this tensor omega with all these lower anti-holomorphic indices, but because there's a background metric running around, to use that metric to raise half of the indices, so I'll raise the j's. It wouldn't matter if I raise the i's because omega is symmetric under the exchange of I and j. So then I get this p form valued in the pth antisymmetric power of the holomorphic tangent bundle. And on these sorts of forms, the d bar operator acts naturally. And so indeed, the chirality condition that this operator, is annihilated by. Well, the chirality condition on this operator is simply the condition that this tensor is annihilated by D-bar. And similarly, there's also a reduction to cohomology, analogous to the reduction to Doble to cohomology here, because we only want to consider these sorts of F terms up to the addition of terms which come from D terms, or more generally terms that could be written as integrals over, just say, 3/4 of superspace. So we want to. What that means is we want to consider these operators as being defined up to the addition of q bar or something. So I should say that, so these, one way to think about these operators, these sorts of chiral operators, it's especially clear when I consider these sections of this bundle, is that these are the four-dimensional signal model analogs of the local chiral operators in two-dimensional signal models that come from local observables of the topological B model. All right.
One question. Mm-hmm. P for one case naturally corresponds to the formation of complex structure. The other piece, do they have any geometric meaning?
They don't have any classical. No, they don't have any classical geometric meaning. I mean, you could just think about them as being some deformations of the supersymmetry algebra. So I'm ready now to talk about the heterotic string. Well, I can say at the outset that the consideration of these sort of higher F terms in the context of heterotic collabial compactifications is also being considered, although from quite a different perspective, by Antonianis, Gavin, Orion, and Taylor a few years ago. And so I'll just mention that there's this other reference that has some complementary, sort of very complementary perspective to the things I'll be telling you today. Now, I want to sketch for you some somewhat explicit Wöhrlschen instanton computations of these sorts of higher F terms. And so, just like we have various ways to describe the fundamental string, using, for instance, the RNS formalism, the Green-Schwarz description, the Berkowitz hybrid formalism, there are different ways to do these Wöhrlschen instanton computations. Now, the formalism that I find very convenient, I'll call the physical gauge formalism. And this is just really just the Green-Schwarz formalism after having fixed the kappa symmetry. So this formalism is just the Wöhrlschen instanton analog of the usual way people do brain instanton computations for higher dimensional brains using supersymmetric versions of the DBI action. It has quite a few advantages in the simple case that we're just discussing, a smooth holomorphic curve embedded in some threefold. So for instance, this formalism preserves a manifest supersymmetry in the target space, so we can just compute our F term directly without having to pick out a certain little component.
So from the 10-dimensional point of view, it's a light cone gauge?
Well, I mean, I'm considering some
Green-Schwarz light cone gauge.
Yeah, it's not really light cone gauge because, I mean, it would be light cone gauge. It would be the analog of light cone gauge on my holomorphic curve. I mean, my world sheet is a soliton. I'm just looking at the physical fluctuations of the world volume fields on my string. So,
do the features get conventional kinetic terms? Does the world sheet Lagrangian become essentially a free theory?
Well, I mean, the thetas will have conventional the conventional kinetic terms. The theory is not a free theory. There'll be all sorts of higher interactions coupling.
Sigma
model type interactions.
Yeah, so we've done the light cone gauge or not. Still don't get it.
No, it's like the analog of light cone gauge, but I just don't want to.
What is it then?
How is it different from light cone gauge? Do you eliminate do you solve the second class constraints and eliminate the degrees of freedom that usually cause problems?
I eliminate all unphysical degrees of freedom. That's why this is in physical gauge. There are no.
It looks like light cone, perhaps. You say it's different.
Well, no, I mean, I just don't want to call it light cone because there's something. I mean, I don't want to talk about going to light cone gauge in an arbitrary holomorphic.
Well, but you still have your R31, so you can go with light cone gauge using the R31 and not.
Well, let's see. He's going to explain probably.
Yeah, I'm going to explain precisely what I'm going to do, and maybe it'll be more clear. I mean, as I said, I just really just want to think about what are the physical fluctuations. I'm just going to reduce my theory to the. As I said, the one way to think about this is I'm just doing. I mean, if I were talking about a P brain, and I were trying to do some P brain computation using the DBI.
But those are sort of ad hoc anyway, because you don't have a fundamental
theory. Oh, I don't need I'm just doing a soliton. I'm treating my string as a soliton, so I don't need a fundamental theory of solitons to do soliton computations. So that's the philosophy that sits behind this.
The expression was raised. How do your kinetic terms now for fermions come about? Where do they come from? Let's see.
I'll show you. So as I was saying, that in fact there is. So I said one way to think about these things is just these are the Wöhrlschen. I mean, these are the fundamental string analogs of these brain computations, and there's indeed a precise correspondence. If I consider the particular case of the SO32 heterotic theory, then under S duality, the fundamental string Wöhrlschen instantons of that theory map to type 1 D1 brain instantons. So if you want to think about it, I'm doing a type 1 D1 brain instanton computation using a DBI type formalism. So as I said, some of the advantages of this physical gauge are that it preserves manifest supersymmetry. It makes counting physical fermion zero modes immediate because I'm only discussing the physical degrees of freedom. And also, as with any brain that wraps a supersymmetric cycle in the supersymmetric background, the world volume theory is automatically a topologically twisted theory. So this simplifies the computation quite a bit. So anyway, so I want to begin by just describing what these physical degrees of freedom are on my twisted world volume theory. So I'm considering my holomorphic QFC embedded in 10 dimensions, and C2 times X, where I've just chosen some complex structure on the 4 Euclidean directions. And so let me start by just describing for you. So of course, the physical degrees of the physical bosons on C just describe normal fluctuations to C in this 10 dimensions. So I'll split those, so there are 4 complex bosons on C, which I'll split into 2 sets, X, mu, and Y, m, where these mu and m just take values 1 and 2. And X and Y are valued, well, X is valued in the rank 2 trivial bundle on C, and Y is valued in the holomorphic normal bundle, C and X. So now much more interesting are the physical fermions. These are the, I basically want to exhibit for you this natural twisting of the theory. So, first of all, in the left moving sector on C, I have the current algebra. I'm going to assume I'm working in the SO32 heteronic string so that my current algebra is just described by 32 fermions. And by convention, these left moving fermions, their kinetic operator will be the D-bar operator coupled to the appropriate bundle. So I'll call these fermions lambda in the bundle to consider. So they're left moving spinners on C. So this is the left moving spin bundle on C, tensored up with the restriction of my gauge bundle V to C. And I'll call this, give this product a name. This is V minus, the minus from the left moving spin bundle. And now the twisted fermions live in the right moving sector, which is associated to the geometry of C and its embedding in X. So let me just tell you what these are. So first of all, because these right-moving fermions, their kinetic operator is the D operator, it's most natural to regard them as sections of anti-holomorphic bundles on C. So that's why these bars appear here. And so, for instance, we have 2 fermions, which I'll call theta alpha, which transform as left-moving spinners in C2. That's just this trivial rank 2 bundle, and in the trivial bundle on C. We have another pair of fermions, which transform again as left-moving spinners in C2, but now as one forms of type 0,1 on C. So here, Z and Z bar are local holomorphic and anti-holomorphic coordinates on C, and this just indicates that it's a one form. And finally, we have some normal bundle fermions, which I'll call chi bar. These transform as right-moving spinners in C2 and as sections of the anti-holomorphic normal bundle. So you can ask, where does it come from? So it comes from just reducing the physical. So I just, it comes just from indeed, effectively going to light cone gauge to see what the physical green degrees of freedom in say Green Schwartz description of this of C looks like, and then we just reduced them, and then we just basically just use the fact that this is a holomorphic curve and a Calabi-Yau threefold to make some identifications of spin bundles in 10 dimensions to sort of identify these things as transforming in these twisted bundles. So I mean, this is precisely the analogous to the statement that spinners on this Calabi-Yau threefold can be identified with differential forms on the threefold, and I've just sort of applied that identification locally near C.
Well, so what you did is you have a faint idea what the spectrum is, and then you forget the whole heterotic string and you write something nice for radical.
Well, so I know what, all right, so I know what the spectrum is. This is the spectrum. Yeah, that's more or less it. I know what the spectrum is, and I know what the action is. I'm just going to use the.
Okay.
Yeah.
Procedure, fine.
Right. You're the one determinant or the structure of the fluctuations near.
That's right. So I'm just going to be working at low. You know, we'll just need to work in low order, like one loop order, and so this is really gets me quite far.
Some people have spent some time in seeing that this is full of problems, and that's how it goes. You know, you can go on and on and on with all the problems, but you're saying let's forget it all. I just do one loop, and I don't care about all the other problems.
Yeah, I'm not.
He's not doing heteronic string theory per se.
No.
Doing this an instant time.
This is. No.
And this is more like the short formulation for heteronic string. Yeah. The formulation that he's doing.
That's precisely right. I mean, this. You see, there's no. For instance, there's no conformal symmetry. There's no symmetry. I mean, C has a, in my formalism, C has a metric. The metric on C is just induced from its embedding in X. Why? There's no, C doesn't have any conformal symmetry. There's no need to integrate over metrics. C has, you know, it's just a solifying.
I think this is a proposal, isn't it? We take it for how far it goes. Cooper, you don't agree?
Well, I'm saying that if you had a target theory, which you do, without knowing the heterodyne of homomorphic theory, etc., you could still ask what are the instantons, and try to do that instanton. So you do the usual technology of instantons, the Marbach is an instanton.
You could.
For example, the three-point functions on a sphere is rigid and so on, so you could try to build up similar computations the same way. You could reform it, but it's
not at all.
I mean, for instance, this I'm going to use this formalism to do this computation of the superpotential, just as an example. And there, of course, we do the computation. You know, there's an Arnes, you know, Hadamard compare. They're the same.
So, in principle, in any case, this would probably be, if you worked there just by looking at your field content, I would guess this is probably some hybrid formalism.
It's very much like, I mean, because
the theta alpha z bar, can one think of that as a z bar derivative of theta alpha?
This is just a separate field.
I know, but if I go back to strings,
I'm doing
this coming from strings. Would it be some sort of a z bar derivative of the theta stringy coordinate? No. I mean, theta alpha is the zero mode.
Like NSR formulation and, for example, Berkowitz-like formulations are different. Mm-hmm. In the case of, for example, Calabi compactification, they become forms, whereas the other ones are not forms.
You're
twisting it. So, it's
so this is just something hybrid.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing. If you want to do hydraulic string, the closest thing to this is hydrochromism of Berkowitz.
So if you wanted to reconnect this, you would have to actually take this as a ansatz and prove that it's equivalent to the hydraulic string.
Yeah. I don't think it's a big deal to do that, actually. But
what are you using the Fabian average?
The Calabi-Yau condition actually comes in making this identification. Essentially, the Calabi-Yau condition. I use the Calabi-Yau condition in identifying these fermions as transforming these particular bundles. So I'm using looking at the adjunction, and using identifications like the square of the normal bundle is like the. I haven't thought about that, so I'm not quite sure what if you would find something. So as I said, since there are lots of questions about this formula, I do want to do some simple computations with it. And so I guess the first thing I want to do is just to use this formalism to count the physical fermion zero modes, since that's going to control the structure of this operator that we generate. So I'm not going to make any assumptions about this bundle V, so I'm not going to count, I'll talk about V later, so I'm not going to count lambda zero modes, which of course depend on V, but I'm going to count these right-moving fermion zero modes that depend on this geometry. I just want to make a little table. So for instance, we see that no matter what the geometry C is, we'll always have. So I just say to count these zero modes, I'm just counting anti-holomorphic sections of these bundles, or holomorphic sections of the conjugate bundles. So we see from the constants, I always have two fermion zero modes coming from this size theta alpha. And so in any instanton computation, these two zero modes are related to the two supersymmetries broken by the instanton. So these things will generate this d2 theta part of the chiral measure. Now in general, if I consider a curve of genus G, you'll see that these fermions, which come from one forms on C, have two G zero modes. And finally, so these fermions are valued in the normal bundle. So if I consider a curve that has P infinitesimal deformations inside X, and these fermions will carry two P zero modes, where so P is here just the number of holomorphic sections of the normal bundle, and of course P is going to be related to this that I defined earlier for the degree of my multi-fermion F term. So now, as I said, I want to do a couple of example computations. So I'm going to assume that C just has genus 0 now. So C is just CP1. And so I'm going to do these computations in worldwide perturbation theory, which means I'm just going to need to look at the local geometry of C in my Calabi-Yau threefold. I'm going to consider two cases. The first case is just the simple case that I mentioned in the introduction, that C is an isolated curve, smooth isolated, so it's normal bundle, just O of minus 1 plus O of minus 1. So, of course, in this case, P is equal to 0. And the second case is going to be the case that I'm interested in for the deformation of complex structure, that C moves in a holomorphic one-parameter family.
Relation to the usual uncompactified
variables. Oh, yeah.
If you take
then
vanishes,
then all these
vanishes.
Well, all the
yeah,
all the things.
I just want to know the zero
motor.
Oh,
well, I mean, then I would. Then you really could take. I mean, the green Schwarz string and Lycon gauge. Just fix the.
Just tell them for the so what x is t6. Just tell them what to, just so that they know what.
Yeah. So what would the theta alpha z bar be
if x is t6? If x is t6.
Take a t2 for it. Suppose your curve is not cp1 but t2 inside the t6, and keep the variables in that line. So you know what to come on. Take a bundle of trim.
I see. Yeah. So I mean the curve. I mean. These things are just intrinsic to the curve, right? This is just the trivial bundle, and these are the one parts. The normal bundle, of course, will just be trivial in the case that we're just in flat space. And I mean,
so you wouldn't have any chi's.
So there will be four complex, in other words, there will be four complex speeds there. That's n, but yeah. Trivial. So just flavor indexes, which four flavor indices. And the other one is the worksheet one form. So omega yeah. bar one form is the one form. This z bar label he has written it already.
Yeah.
So what is it?
Well, I mean, it would just...
It's so that's not in the original variables of the green Schwarz string, so...
You're asking how to translate... You're going back to the other question. Is how you read off what these are the other
angles? Yeah, I think that was... But maybe you haven't thought about this, but it might be worth thinking about it.
Okay, yeah, I think the translation... Yeah, I haven't thought about this in detail, but I think that, I mean, there's not a lot to say, really. I mean, this is just some... More general. I mean, some you know, allowing things to be curved. And, sure. Right. So I was saying, though, the case I did want to consider was this case that C moves in a one-parameter holomorphic family.
This, by the way, is more like, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Birkhoff's chromosome. He has also
yeah.
P and theta. I think theta, what he calls theta alpha of Z bar, Birkhoff is called P, I think.
Yeah, there's something
more. And P D theta is what Birkhoff is right. So this is P alpha, D theta alpha.
Right, yeah, see, there's, yeah, indeed, so, I mean, there's a natural...
So it's the first order.
Yeah. Alright, so as I was saying, in this case that P moves, I'm going to consider this case that C moves in this smooth, in this one-parameter holomorphic family. The normal bundle in that case will have a trivial factor from the family. And then a degree of minus two parts. So this is the case. P equals one above. And now I just want to do these computations. Do some computations. So the way in this sort of solitonic formulation of the instanton computation, the way we do the computation is very simple. We just want to integrate out all of the physical fluctuating degrees of freedom on C. So to compute the operator that's generated by C, we just evaluate the world volume half integral. I'll always be evaluating this half integral just to one loop. In the case of this C superpotential computation that I'm about to do, this one loop computation is enough to determine the superpotential exactly. So this is just the computation that I sort of started, began my talk with. So if we do this one loop path integral, what does the answer look like? Well, first of all, so in this case that C is isolated, it carries, of course, four bosonic zero modes associated with the translations in C2 and these two fermionic zero modes. So this, the usual n equals 1 chiral measure arises from the perspective of the instanton just as an integral over the collective coordinates of the instanton. And this thing, WC, the superpotential, arises from the one loop integral over all the fluctuating modes on the instanton. So as I said before, so WC includes a classical contribution just from the action of the instanton. Now I want to make these one loop factors precise, which I can do because I know all the physical degrees of freedom on my curve, and there I know their kinetic operators. They're just, in the case of the fermions, just the D-bar operators coupled to these bundles. The bosons are the usual.
Covariant formulation of
Berkowitz.
What about chi? Is that not a
P for
chi? I mean,
theta
z bar, I understand.
Uh-huh.
Theta z bar is really quantum momentum
of
theta.
Okay, well, I mean, these things.
Yeah.
They're
chi stands by itself. Do I misunderstand something?
No. I mean, these are the physical. I mean, are you asking about, okay.
Yeah, I'm asking, is chi is theta different from the theta scale?
No, I mean, these are all, I don't know in what sense these are all, I mean, are you asking, these?
I look for the interpretation of these results. I understand that you say these are results.
Peter, I think it's something that we can't resolve right now in the talk, but
yeah.
It's resolvable.
We should figure out.
I'm not sure. I don't understand quite the question. I'm just, okay. But we'll,
just maybe. Remind us how many of the functions variables they are, like the formal ways. Get the notation
straight. So the thetas are scalars, and the thetas z bars are one form. Uh-huh. And the chi bars are they're also scalars.
They're
spinners.
And
the,
how many of those?
There are four of them. This is a normal bundle index, so it takes values 1 and 2, and this is a spinner index, so it takes 1 and 2. It's a four-dimensional
spinner. Okay, so it's a four-dimensional spinner, but on the world sheet, it's what?
It's a scale. Well, it's a section of the normal. I mean,
it depends on what that normal bundle is.
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, it depends on how the Riemann surface sits inside the Fourier.
Okay. Yeah.
But in a naive case,
you just scale it. You scale
it. Right.
Four direction,
Fourier
direction. Okay, right.
So let's see. So I was going to do these one loop integrals. So what happens is, because these right moving fermions are all are twisted, the one loop integral over the non-zero modes of these right moving fermions cancels against the one loop integral over the corresponding right moving modes of the bosons. So we really just have to think about the left moving modes when we do these one loop integrals. So there are these left moving fermions, and their one loop integral. Well, just their one loop contribution is just going to be the Pfaffian of this D bar operator coupled to this bundle, C minus. And then for the left moving modes of these bosons, we're just going to find some other determinants of D bar operators. So from the two bosons X, which are just valued in the trivial bundle, we'll have a square of the determinant of the D bar operator coupled to the trivial bundle. And for the two Ys, which are valued in O of minus 1, we'll find the square of the determinant of D bar coupled to O of minus 1 on C. And this prime just means that I'm omitting the zero modes of these x's here in computing these determinants. So this is our one loop computation of the superpotential, sort of admirably direct in this physical gauge formalism.
In the non-zero mode cancel, you need the index field, but in that naive argument, you don't cancel it. cases to be wrong, but you can justify it carefully. Have you thought about it here? You just say that the determinants cancel, like in any supermodal theory. But it's not always true.
No, it would be very bad, though, if that didn't happen, because, you see, the superpotential should be a Hilbert. Yeah. I mean, you can see it explicitly. I mean, another way to see that it had to happen is just that the superpotential is supposed to be a holomorphic function of the moduli. So D bar does depend holomorphically on the complex structure moduli of X and V. But if you had any sort of D coming from the right moving sector, that would not depend holomorphically. So.
Is whatever you think is natural.
Yeah, I'm just gonna I'm about to break, and I'm just gonna wanna make one comment about this result. So I just want to say, so you can look at this, and as I said, you know, this is a little bit of a formal result because we haven't made the precise dependence of these one loop factors on the complex structure moduli clear. But there is one very general sort of conclusion I want to draw from this, and that's just when is this thing zero or non-zero. So we're interested in the case that this is non-zero. And you can see
the thing with the sum of the C's of this.
In particular, I'm just interested in the contribution of C. So when can C contribute to the superpotential? I just want to conclude that C can contribute to the superpotential. So you see, the only way that this could vanish, this doesn't vanish, these things don't vanish. The only way that this expression can vanish is if this Fapien vanishes. And the vanishing of the Fapien will occur whenever this D-bar operator has zero modes. Because there are no, I mean, of course, it trivially vanishes. So as long as this D-bar operator doesn't have any zero modes, then the superpotential contribution from C is non-zero. And in fact, there's a nice geometric condition on the bundle V for this Fapien to be non-zero. And that's just the condition that the restriction of V to C has to be trivial. So I basically just want you to draw from this that this superpotential, this sort of expression is non-zero, at least is not identically zero, and that it's non-zero in the case, in this particular case. So now's probably a good time to break.
Taking 10 minutes right now.
One solution.
Should we leave this on, Ari, or turn it off?
Oh, okay, let's.